These are your shooting stars, and they become bored because they can do more. Look for that opportunity. Look for that engagement on those shooting star employees and give them an opportunity. But you have to engage with them.
I'm Matt Fazell from Madison, Wisconsin, and you're listening to You're a Financial Planner, Now What? The podcast to help you fast track your career by bringing you meaningful conversations on topics that influence new financial planners, their careers, and the lives of their clients.
Welcome back. Today, Jared Upton joins Hannah for episode 144. Jared is a CFP and operations consultant, and in this episode, he dives deep into what new planners need to know about operations and firm culture. He also shares his secrets to success and how new planners can not just enter the profession well, but progress quickly on their career path. Straight ahead, Jared dives into what he sees as the good, bad, and ugly facing new planners as they enter the profession and what they can do about it.
Well, thanks for joining us today, Jared.
Thanks, Hannah. I really appreciate it. I'm looking forward to catching up.
So you have such an interesting career, and I've known you for, well, it feels like many years now, but you just recently made a transition about 6 months ago into the consulting world. But I'm really curious. I know when you were kind of looking at making that change, we had some conversations, and you were really interested in that COO, the chief operating officer of a firm. And I'm curious, for people who are listening to this and kind of looking at the alternative career paths, what made you interested in a COO role? And then what along your career path really made you qualified to, you know, potentially step into a COO role?
You know, that's a really interesting question. Pursuing a COO path from an advisory standpoint is probably not the typical path most people seek, especially when they're coming out of college. And from what I've seen, a lot of them want to go be an advisor or a planner of some sort. For me, part of my love of doing what I'm doing today has been really supporting the people that I'm around. And I just tend to be very aligned from an operational standpoint. And My passion has stepped more from an outside consulting role, an outside advisory role with an RA into both a consulting position, but also a COO position. It was really about being able to, one, work with an organization and be able to build the operations to support the passion of what we're doing, which what our company is doing today is we're helping advisors. But to do that, you've got to have good systems. You have to have good processes, and ultimately, then you have to have good people. And I look at the operational responsibility as aligning that. And so that's one of the things I feel that I've been blessed with. And previously, my experiences, all the way back from even when I was a kid, have helped me to align to think things through an operational process. Secondly, I'd say, again, a really great operations/COO people also can take the strategic and communicate it and be able then to translate it into the tactical as well. And it's being able to go back and forth between those two things when you're thinking about an organizational infrastructure.
So in your past roles, were you in a position to be like that COO role?
Yes, I've done the work in various capacities throughout my entire career, all the way from leading people, implementing and developing projects, working through operational process design, managing and overseeing client experience enhancements. And really true, when you think about anyone that is running operations, their whole goal is to align an organization to run as seamlessly as possible. They're the support. They're helping the advisors, the salespeople, really to look great, because if they're out selling, if they're out working with the end client, and they close the business or bring in the client then at that point, we all want to have a great experience. And so how do you actually take the vision and interpret it into reality so you've got that organization? One analogy I love to use is about building a house. So building a house, most people I know love to go pick out paint or looking at what's going to go into their kitchen. However, if you don't have working plumbing, electricity, or a good foundation, it's not going to matter what type of paint or kitchen fixtures you're going to put into your house, because they're not going to run properly. And so really, to make things work well on the outside, you've got to have everything built from a strong infrastructure. And so I look at my role as being able to support that infrastructure. And I get a lot of pride in that, pride in seeing things work well, but two, supporting the people that are making it work, seeing them grow and develop and be successful in their careers.
I'm listening to all this. I'm like, I totally see the value, and probably because the COO role is not my personal strong suit. I'm curious, you know, we look at different firms and really from a business side of it, especially, you know, so from the perspective of new planners entering the profession, what is a point where really a COO is appropriate hire for a firm? Or maybe what are the different indicators that a COO is needed or somebody dedicated to that operations side?
It's going to vary from organization to organization. And a lot of it's going to be based on level of complexity and level of ability of the people in the firm. And so if you're looking at a progression of a COO role, whether you're developing someone internally versus bringing someone externally, a lot of times a newer firm, they may need an operations manager or maybe a client services manager. And then for a medium or a growing firm, may move into more of a director of operations role. And or a large organization ultimately moving into a COO or chief operating officer. With the inflection points of different firms, it's really going to be based on the level of complexity and of breadth that the firm is supporting and serving. When you're a smaller a firm and you have less people that you need to serve, and maybe the founder can be more involved in the day-to-day, you may not need necessarily a COO role. You may, again, a really strong operations manager or even a director of operations. But as you grow, and that inflection point will vary. It's typically going to be in the $4 million in revenue onwards up to around $8 to $10 million in revenue. I know that's a pretty wide array for a true COO role. And the reason why is that really qualified COOs aren't cheap. And so you've got to have the revenue to support to bring someone in or promote someone from within. And often they'll have a really a varied and expansive background and being able to take that intellectual and technological horsepower and put it to work. You need to have an organization that's going to be, one, able to afford it, but two, have the need for it from the complexity standpoint. Whereas a director of operations can be someone that is in a $1 to $2 million firm on up to, again, a $4 to $7 million firm, and they can still be close to a COO, but they're going to be much more engaged operationally, maybe not as much on the strategic standpoint.
Well, it's really exciting to hear you talk about that this operations career path, it can also be a lucrative career path. Like it's not just, you're not just going to always be at a, you know, a certain level. Like there's really is, you know, growth and salary growth potential.
Absolutely. It's like anything else in life. If you have a line of sight and you're looking towards that development and you want to improve yourself and you're bringing value to the company and you've got to get in a good company culture, financially, it's going to follow. I think back to a story my dad told me growing up. He said, pick a role, pick a career that you're passionate about. Financially, you'll be rewarded. Financially, it'll follow. Where I've, again, when I've worked with younger individuals or people in various stages of their career, they're looking at money first, and they may be in a job they absolutely hate. They don't like. And it's really sad to see people that are in those types of positions. Whereas just picking that passion that is helping them to take them to where they want to go, the money will ultimately follow. And so that would be my one piece of advice is find something you're passionate about. Not every day is going to be great, but if you're still working towards that goal, eventually the financial rewards will become apparent.
You mentioned the skill sets of the people in the firm. For the listeners to this podcast right now, what are ways that they can be developing their operational skill set?
So with an operations skill set, you've got to be a bit of a jack of all trades to a degree. So don't be afraid to try things out of your wheelhouse. Learn as much as you can. And I would say folks that may be coming out of a financial planning program, if you have a really strong desire and you like working in the operations, maybe more of the back office structure, it's still a great idea to pursue advanced education, getting your CFP, pursuing even an advanced degree like an MBA of sorts, but trying a lot of different things, because when you move up into those higher level roles, like a DO role or in the CO role, you've got to be able to see the connections between different things, that interconnectedness of the firm. And it's not going to be just singular. It's how do pieces work together. One way to think about it is like a puzzle. And we each see a puzzle piece. We can see it for what it is. And sometimes in our careers, we only ever see that piece. When you start getting into the strategic portion of your career and in that, again, that CEO role, it's being able to take the puzzle pieces and put them together. But sometimes you see how they can fit with other pieces still to make the picture become more alive or more vibrant in color based on where you're wanting to go. So long story to your question, Hannah, is try lots of different roles. Figure out what makes an organization work from soup to nuts, and don't ever be afraid to continue to learn. Just because you graduate or get your CFP or your MBA or whatnot, have that lifelong learning, that pursuit of education, because it will help you from any career you choose and most definitely in an operations path.
So for the people listening to this who are really focused on financial planning and they're like, you know, I know that I want to be a lead financial planner, what would be your advice to them, especially on the operations side of it?
Well, that's really interesting. With financial planners, I know for me, when I first got out and got my CFP, I was so focused on, you know, I want to go serve clients. I want to go and help them and run a financial plan and explain to Monte Carlo and all the things that go involved with the financial planning. Where sometimes I felt I was short-sighted is I didn't understand what happens once I hand that plan in. And so if you're a financial planner and you may want to be your own business owner, maybe you're a business owner now, is seeing all the pieces behind, because that actually can help you engage your client more deeply. Because if you're able to explain the process, or if a glitch happens, and glitches happen in life, is being able to go and maintain that confidence with your client so that, one, you can explain it to them, but then you can follow up and follow through on any of the back office transaction needs or the back office technology needs, still to make sure your client is engaged and that they are you're still representing their best values.
So one thing I'm really passionate about, especially with newer planners, is that you really need to understand the dynamics of the business that you're working in. And so I'm curious, from your perspective, especially now as you're consulting other firms and you're kind of getting that inside look into different financial planning firms, what is it that the new planners need to be aware of, or different indicators they need to be looking at as they're starting in these firms and working through their career path?
So if you're new into your career and you're newer into a firm, one thing I would recommend is, I've done this in prior organizations, is to go and spend time shadowing with each member of the organization. Coffee's not terribly expensive thing for us to purchase or take someone out. Go and take your peers out for a cup of coffee or bring them a cup of coffee at Starbucks. That time will be very well spent. And there's a great book that I would recommend anyone read. It's by Dale Carnegie. It's How to Win Friends and Influence People. And that book talks about principle. It's about really getting to know people, taking time out and to learn what they do, be caring about what they do, want to understand what they do, because that will help you in whatever path you're wanting to take to be more well-rounded and have that deeper interconnection and understanding. And also what it does for newer planners or newer individuals into a firm, you start figuring out what areas you like and what areas you don't like. And that can save you time and months, if not years, in your pursuit of your career by figuring that out. If you figure it out earlier, just because you take a little bit of extra time, you spend some time with the folks around you, find out what makes them tick and what got them where they're at, it can really help to enhance a career in any capacity in the financial services industry by doing just a simple thing as having a cup of coffee with someone.
One of the buzz things around financial planning right now is career paths. And thankfully it is, right? Like, we need firms to be building out career paths. What are you seeing as the trends in career paths, or what are you seeing happening in that space right now?
In career paths, there's still a pretty broad gap. A lot of firms I've spoken with, they know that they want to get to a career path with their organization, but they're not sure how. And often one of the things I've seen is, but they've not ever done it before. A lot of organizations, they may have, again, read a study, but they've not they've not really implemented a true career path. Because when you're thinking about a career path, you need to have really, there's three key things. One, you need to have the purpose of the path. Where are we getting to? What's the end goal? Two, what are the levels? And really thinking about gamifying it. If anybody's ever played video games or board games or whatever, there's different levels. And that also will really resonate to the millennial audience is, okay, at this level, at a financial planner level one, you need to have this type of job role and responsibility and skill set. And then ultimately you have to a level two. So gamifying it and having levels at that point. So that clarity of purpose and alignment. Say the second one is have it with intention. So often one of the things I've seen with firms is they go in, they'll bring someone in, they have a great idea of wanting to have a career path, but they don't always necessarily follow through on it. And then that's where you start seeing individuals, and I've seen it as well, where they become disengaged or disenfranchised because they've been somewhere for 2, 3, 4 years, and they're not seeing any momentum or growth necessarily, and they sometimes will leave. And so again, that needs to be shared on both sides by engaging your manager or senior advisor. But I'd also say for any of the senior advisors listening, also engage your millennials, really asking, where do you want to go? What would you like to do? Getting that information out of them. And then really the third area, what I would say is going to be on follow through with action, because words are cheap. Action is really where the heart of it is. And by following through on that action, whether it's you set a commitment, you actually follow through and deliver. And that's on both sides. So if you're newer in the industry and you're like, I'm going to get my CFP, I'm going to go do all the things that my boss or senior advisor says I need to do, and I'm proactively engaging with them, I'm following through on it. Let's say the opposite is true. If you're committing to hiring someone and bringing them in and you set action items or deliverables they need to accomplish, is when they do, reward them, whether that's with a title, whether that's with monetary compensation, or whether that's with some new type of responsibility or project. But I'd say that's those areas are still the same things I see today. And it's often harder to implement a career path because it needs those three things. And frankly, it's going to take time.
Well, I really like this idea, and we're going to be talking about this more on the podcast in the coming months, of managing up. And I heard you say that several times in there. Like, this isn't something, I mean, ideally you'd walk into a firm and it'd already be planned out and mapped out. But there is some level of like new planners walking into these firms where they can help co-create or help create this career path for themselves. Would you agree with that?
I would, because when... Let's say that you're in a team of three and you're brought in and you're now the fourth person, you have 25% impact in that organization. Or if the organization has nine people and now you're the 10th, you have a 10% impact of that organization. And so that can significantly move the needle in an organization positively or negatively. And I'll give a recommendation for something great for managing up and managing down. Several years ago at the FPA Leadership Conference, I had the opportunity to hear a speaker. Her name is Sherry Harley, and she has a website called Candid Culture. On her website, she had a book called How You Can Say Anything to Anyone, and the whole premise is all about you say it through asking questions. So if you're managing up to an advisor, we can often tell, I want more money, I want more responsibility, I want, I want, I want. Whereas you can still say the same thing, but you say it through asking. And you can say an example, what would the career path look like for someone who wants to be a senior financial advisor? What type of skill sets do I need to master to show you that I'm ready to have this type of responsibility? And so by asking those questions and engaging proactively, your supervisor or financial advisor can really show that you're thinking through this, because the same skill set's also going to be true when you're working with clients. Clients, you've got to get that information out of them. And a lot of times you do this by asking questions. I would say for those of you that may be hiring managers listening to this, asking your employees, so where do you want to be at in 3 years? What do you think is the right way to get there? And then this is where, Hannah, as you mentioned, the co-creation side, it's really allowing from a partnership on both sides. And so it's that shared accountability where you have both the supervisor and the employee, and they're working in alignment, trying to work in harmony so that you're able to, one, accomplish the roles of the company, but two, you're working on a path side by side. You're working on a path together.
And I know a lot of what you're doing in your consulting work right now is helping firms come together to do this and really operate well as a team. But I'm curious, especially being the advocate for new planners, at what point does somebody need to realize that they're not making headway? Or what are the indicators that somebody needs to move on from a firm?
That's always a slippery question to ask, is when's the right time for an exit? You know, something I'm always thinking about, you're either managing a person up through an organization or you're managing them out. When I think of a question, when I've advised people, or unfortunately, whenever I've had to terminate someone, it is often the most painful and challenging experience that you go through. Because again, if you're a caring, empathetic leader, you care about people. You want them to be successful. And people in the audience may have heard, is it a skill issue? So skill is training, feedback, coaching, development. So can you give them the skill set to develop them? Or is it a will issue? Is it an attitude challenge where they don't have the work ethic, they don't have the ambition, they don't have the right attitude to engage with their team? Are they respectful, kind? Are they resonating within the organization? And one of the things that we've advised companies to think through, or firms to think through, is really look through the lens of your core values. We all have core values, either our own personal core values, and or we have our company core values. Is if you're looking at the lens of your core values in an organization, first of all, is this individual identifying and following through on the core values? If they're not, we need to have that coaching conversation with them. If they are, then we need to say, okay, are they acting inconsistent with our core values? Or if they are acting consistent with our core values and we need to make a change, maybe we need to review the core values. The biggest time to think through moving someone out, it would be one of two reasons. One, and this is really on the positive side, is they are beyond what the job is. So these are your shooting stars, and they become bored because they can do more. Look for that opportunity. Look for that engagement on those shooting star employees and say, can you do more? And maybe you carve out 10, 20, 30% of their role and give them an opportunity. But you have to engage with them. You have to proactively work with them and try to get that feedback. Where do you want to go? And then see if they can follow through on it. Two, if it's just not a fit, if it's time for them to transition on, you have a crucial conversation with them. And to say, I mean, you can ask them, help me to understand why you want to be here. I mean, I'm seeing that you're not passionate about the role. Every day you come in, there's challenges. Tell me what's going on. You can get out of them through asking the questions. And even if you're not, and you've got to make that hard decision to move on, I would make it and just pull the Band-Aid off and move forward. Because what's happening, if you have an individual that is detracting your organization, they're actually they're slowing productivity, they're negatively impacting culture for everybody else. And so you may have your people around you that are thankful when that individual actually leaves. And then you see, again, more of a bright day in the organization because, you know, people are able to focus on what they're passionate about.
So for the shooting star, that rising star that's in a firm, so speaking to them is kind of, and again, that approach of kind of that career mentor, if you would, what's the point where you realize that maybe you want more from your job than what your firm is offering? Or kind of a reverse, not so much from the firm's perspective on when to leave, but from the employee's perspective on when to leave.
So if you fit the shooting star mold, and this may speak to a lot of the audience, one, I would say not to just leave just because, you know, every company I've ever been a part of, they all have their quirks. None of them are perfect because we're not perfect as people. I would say engage with your manager. Let them know you're ready to take on that opportunity. Let them know you're ready to take on responsibility. Also, show them through your engagement, whether that's, again, your outside engagement too. Are you getting involved in FPA or any local boards or supporting your alumni association or any other activities, one, to give back? Are you showing you're ready to take on that next level of responsibility? If you have done that and you've engaged and they've said, you know what, we've got a 5-year waiting period, you just have to do this job for the next 5 years, that's when it can be really tough. It can be really tough because if you're looking to seek that next opportunity, is really you've got to be true to yourself, looking at what are you passionate about? What's the right job for you? And I had to do this myself. I went and made a list on what am I passionate about? What job do I truly want to do? Where do I think I'm going to be able to add the most value? And what's going to take me to the next level I want to be at in my career? And how can I serve the most people? And making that list, and then also not doing it alone. Seeking outside counsel, seeking mentors. They may be in the organization, they may be a close confidant, maybe even your boss, but also seeking outside mentors as well. There's lots of mentors from FPA and just in the financial services industry as a whole, but looking at someone who has that experience, that background, who probably was where you are at some point in their career, because they can provide a lot of great feedback and guidance and actually potentially help you. And two, they actually may be hiring. Maybe they know somewhere where there's a job that meets your goals and you have the right skill set and there can be an alignment. But engaging your mentors, especially if you're going to make any life change, that wisdom, that counsel you're getting from the outside can help to reduce anxiety and help to also make the transition go more smoothly when and if that decision occurs.
Yeah, that really resonates hearing you say that, because I know I had outside people who were able to look into my situation when I was first starting out and gave me a completely different perspective that I was like, no, that's not right. And then I was like, oh my gosh, it is.
Yes.
And it made a huge difference.
Every individual I've talked with over the years and mentored, their situations are all a little bit different. But one of the things I would say, I've found a lot of joy in helping out the mentees I've worked with and just in various capacities. And I would encourage the listeners to not be afraid to reach out, not be afraid to go and ask, because mentors, they like that, especially those that want to give back and they want to help. One common fallacy that I hear from especially younger folks, they're like, I don't want to bother them, they're too busy. My encouragement to them is that they want to help you. They're there for you. Even, and yes, they're busy, but they will make themselves available if you reach out. And people that want to do better, they want to improve, and they need help. I have found overwhelmingly in my career that others, both in financial services and outside of financial services, are so willing to give up their time, give their guidance, and really give their support and encouragement if we just ask. And that's, I mean, in consulting, that's one of the hardest things I see is people taking the courage to ask. But secondly, it's having the courage to accept the advice, accept the feedback and guidance.
So in looking on, you're working with Angie Herbers now, and I saw a portion of on the website about next generation leadership development. I'm really interested in that right now and really curious, what does that look like? What, from a leadership standpoint, what do new planners and the next generation of these firms, like what do they need to develop in that and how do they do that?
With next generation leadership development, we're all developing. With up and coming advisors, you see there's a gap in the industry that you've got a lot of those older, more seasoned, tenured advisors, and you have a lot of younger advisors, and there's not a big group of individuals. They're kind of in those middle career years. I mean, in the mid to late 30s to the early 50s, there's kind of a gap. There's not a whole lot in that arena. So you see a lot of individuals that they're coming up. with next generation leadership development, there's actually some great things that the custodians have come out with and some of the other organizations where they'll have the Schwab Executive Leadership Program or the Fidelity G2 program that are for those up and coming advisors, those up and coming leaders. And that's one of the things you're seeing in the industry is a transition to support and give business leadership towards that next generation of talent. I'd say in addition to that, that leadership development doesn't all have to be done within the firm. It can be done through external activities too, such as getting involved in next gen leadership or the FPA leadership, being involved in the committee, giving back and giving support, because the skill set that I've seen, and again, I went through this myself as well, is you build this skill set. It layers on top of each other, and you learn little nuggets about, again, how to manage people, how to lead a committee, how to lead a project, an implementation, or even a conference. And this that follow through was one of the things that will build your reputation over the career. You can also do it inside the organization as well. Is what I call it is the put me in coach mentality. If there's something that no one else wants to do in your organization and you're willing to say, put me in, coach, put me in, a boss, let me go try that. I may not completely know how, but I'm willing to go try it. It's nothing nobody else wants to do. Other opportunities can come from that. And so with those opportunities, it's mentoring, development from inside your company can occur. But I'd also say, if you're inside the company, asking your boss to say, or your senior financial advisor, say, I'm looking for a mentor. Would you be open to spending 1 week or a couple hours a week with me, or a couple hours a month with me? I'd love to have questions. I'd love to ask, get insight, but come prepared. Come prepared on what you want to learn, because the mentor is there to give it to you, and they can develop you through that. And then, and I'd say last but not least, is through colleges now and through, again, organizations such as FPA and the CFP board, there's mentee-mentor matches. And so if you're seeking out a mentor or you want to be a mentor, is you can go on and register and submit your information through, again, a lot of different types of organizations, and be partnered with a mentee and mentor that may or may not be in your company or your city or your state, but you can be able to partner and give back for those that, one, have the desire and capacity and ability to give back. And two, if you're wanting to mentor, there's lots of great young men and women out there that are seeking a mentor as well. And so those would be some ways to develop. And then if you're in an organization, I'd say last but not least, letting your supervisor know that you're working with a mentor, you're working and you're getting involved in other organizations, you're developing, that often is a signal to that leader that they want to also work with you. They want to bring you up as well because they're showing a higher level of engagement for that individual.
And what's so great about all these skill sets is that they go with you. Yes. Like, you don't leave them at a firm. It's something that builds on your career. It's you know, the 20-year-old who's investing in their Roth IRA. It's what you're doing in your career, really.
Absolutely. You know, it's funny when you go in and get that experience, or you develop that mentor relationship, or you get your CFP. It's transferable. It goes with you throughout the rest of your life. That experience, that knowledge. If anybody who has ever traveled to overseas and they've seen Rome, they've seen the pyramids, or they've gone to see McLean Stadium in Waco, Texas. Once you see it, you have that memory with you. You've got that experience, and so. Not taking those lightly, because those experiences make up who we are. And anything you do from a job or a project, or you gain a skill, or you develop a relationship, you'll take that with you through the rest of your life.
So you are working with Andrea Herbers, and I know one of the things whenever I hear her name is this Diamond Team. Can you walk through what is that Diamond Team? What are the different roles? Is there a career path through that, or what is the level of progression in like a Diamond Team?
So with a Diamond Team, the one thing to think about it through is if any of you watch baseball. Baseball, you've got a diamond, you've got the pitcher, first, second, third base, the catcher. You've got different people that are playing different roles. And when if any of you are baseball fans, I know opening day whatever city you're in is probably either occurring or has just occurred. And they all have different skill sets, but they all support each other for the team to serve the team. When we think about a diamond team in financial advisory firms, we think about folks that may be in a rainmaker, development, leader type of role where they're really bringing in the business. Part of their responsibility is to bring in that business. And then think about that as really as the top of the diamond. The right and left-hand sides, think about them more as a lead advisor type of role, someone that's more in a service capacity. They're serving the clients and they're serving them really well. Maybe a little bit of revenue growth through net new assets or net new wallet share or some referral business, but they're really responsible for client service. And then really at the bottom point of the diamond, we think of that as an individual that may be newer into their career. They may be, again, an associate advisor or associate financial planner type of role. And they're working with lower tier clients. Maybe they're doing more of the analysis or some of the base financial planning work, but they're all supporting within that one diamond in an advisory capacity. Whereas you have a separate one more from a client services standpoint, or if you're large enough and you have an investment management department, that can be structured in a similar way. But the career path or career tracks, the career track through that progression aligns with it. So ideally, someone that's younger in their career will start out in that associate position, then maybe move into more of the advisor lead position, and ultimately into the senior role where now they're bringing in assets. And so it follows along with the career path. But two, that diamond, because they're all working in that team, just like on the baseball field, they all have a job and someone's got to catch the ball to get the out through the pop fly, or they've got to try to throw the runner out if they're trying to score on home plate. So you all have a different job, but they work together in that team to support that group of clients. And as organizations grow, we've seen where they may actually have multiple diamond teams, because what it's about is maximizing capacity in that client experience within that team, within that group of clients that's working with that set of advisors.
And for one of these diamond teams, like, what are you seeing is like the number of clients that they can support?
That's an interesting question. That will vary from diamond team to diamond team because of complexity and client size. And then finally, efficiency. We've seen some teams that are supporting a couple few hundred clients, and then others that are supporting more, because if you have a diamond team that's supporting more of a multifamily office style of client, you're not going to be able to have as many. Whereas if you have a diamond team that's supporting the Henry clients, the high earners, not rich yet, those ones that they just don't have the same level of need or level of complexity, the amount you can support is much greater. And then the other area that has a big impact on that team is, as we started out in the beginning of our conversation, is that support infrastructure. The more the support infrastructure you have, the stronger that foundation, the more efficient that team can be to support that level of client. So that's going to vary from organization to organization. I would just say, and my encouragement is to start working and crafting that team, start thinking about your operations or client services team, ultimately support that, because that allows individuals to focus on their highest and best use. And they tend to be more productive when they're focusing on those highest and best use skills.
One of the things that we've talked a lot recently on the podcast about is paraplanners and even this idea of working virtually. Do you see that as a theme coming in the profession, or have you seen that with the clients you've been working with?
I've seen the virtual model work well. To make any type of virtual situation work well, you've got to have really good communication. Make sure what's your communication set up. And in my last organization I worked with, we actually developed out a virtual paraplanner financial planning division that supported advisors all over the country. with that, I've also seen where you have job resourcing now as well, where you may be an advisor and say, I only need to have a paraplanner or a entry-level advisor, and I need them for 2 hours a week, 5 hours a week, 10 hours a week, whatnot. And you can actually source that resource from around the country. And so I anticipate we'll continue to see more of that, because you want to find the right people with the right skill sets to help you at the right time. It's almost more in that gig economy status. Two, if you are a paraplanner and looking for those types of roles, it's a great way to develop that experience. So I anticipate that will continue. But also beyond that, I anticipate the ability for virtual advisors to grow as well. If we think about our integration and reliance on technology today, we can theoretically do anything anywhere. And because being a financial advisor, you're managing that relationship, but you're also working with data, you're working with knowledge, your clients may not be in the same city, state, and or country as you. And even if they are in the same city, they're also busy. And sometimes they may want to call in via Skype or GoToMeeting or any other of the web communication platforms because they're busy. And that way, it actually expands your ability to source and support clients and expands your ability to be diverse geographically.
And it's not just millennial clients that are wanting to meet virtually.
No. Your tenured Xers and baby boomer clients have embraced the technology landscape as well.
So in terms of your consulting work, what are you seeing as trends with new planners today? The good and the great stuff that's coming out, but also the places, you know, if you would, the good, the bad, and the ugly.
So with new planners that are coming out, newer into a career, so the good stuff is there are lots of jobs. Often when I've talked with colleagues or have gone to various schools and looked at recruiting, they're coming out with 3 to 4 offers a lot of times, especially for the top students. And so with the newer planners, there's lots of jobs out there. So if you're new into the career and you are like where you're at or you're wanting to make a change, one, know you've got options. So I'd say that's a really good thing. We have a very healthy job market. And often companies, they are competitive. So they want to bring you in. They want to try to get the talent. So it really makes you, again, a great commodity. The other really great thing, I think, for new planners is our ability to learn and to prepare from the knowledge resources out there. With advent of online media, Twitter, LinkedIn, Facebook, the amount of learning, the amount of engagement that you can find out what's going on in the industry will help propel you to new heights in your career that some of the more seasoned planners may not have had, or if they did have, they did not embrace. And so again, getting that development, getting that resource, and really making it what you want it to be. And then I'd say that the third item that's really great is a shared community. There's a lot of shared community with the next gen movement to be able to find other like-minded individuals. And whether you go to a conference or you just meet in your local city or you meet in a virtual capacity, there's this, again, a good shared community. So you're working and seeing individuals that are in similar life stage, similar career stage, and that shared community can actually help give you feedback, help give you guidance and or resources to help you propel your career. From the negative side, the side that may be a little bit more detracting, with people that are 2, 3, 4, 5 years out, it's still going to take time. It doesn't happen overnight. One of the things I've seen with some of my millennial advisors and or planners is coming out and saying, hey, I've done this role for 3 years. I'm ready to be a senior planner. I'm ready to be X. And it's going to just take time. And the reason why it takes time is this is going to sound cliche. And again, this is going to age myself a bit, Hannah. But if anybody's ever seen Karate Kid, and they think of Mr. Miyagi, wax on, wax off, is that skill set, that repetitiveness, is you're really mastering, you're fine-tuning your craft. And it can take actually years sometimes to fine-tune your craft to be ready to be put into the situation that you know the knowledge, you know the information. So I'd say patience. Patience is one of the hardest things I see from newer planners because they're ready to go, they're ambitious. That's a challenge. The other challenge is not all firms are ready or they have implemented a career path methodology. They've got the right onboarding structure. Then that can also be an opportunity because it can give a newer advisor planner the ability to go in and implement or build something in an organization. But the advisory firm, they're moving forward, but they're still playing catch up in trying to develop some of that infrastructure the advisors that are coming out or newer in their career may be looking for.
Well, thank you, Jared. Is there anything else you want to be sure to add?
I'll end on one note. For those of you in the listener pool, there's a great book that I read a number of years ago, and it's by Marshall Goldsmith. And the name of the book is called What Got Me Here Won't Get Me There. And there's lots of great books. If any of you are interested and want to get a book recommendation, feel free to reach out to me through the social webs. But the book, What Got You Here Won't Get You There, is something that we can always look back and reinvent ourselves and know that we may need different skill sets to get to a higher level, to move forward where we want to go. And just because we graduated from college, that's what got us to graduation. That may not get us to being a firm owner. That may not get us to being senior partner or even being COO. And so what skill sets, what type of lifelong learning do we need to continue to build within ourselves as we are pursuing our passion and pursuing our purpose towards where we want to go? So that's one, again, last book recommendation for your audience, Hannah, is again, What Got You Here Won't Get You There by Marshall Goldsmith.
If you like this episode, you can find more at fpaactivate.org and be sure to join the FPA Activate community on Facebook. It's a growing study group for financial planning professionals, from students to firm owners, professors, and board members. You'll find them all there where you too can lend your voice. We hope you'll join us and help grow the financial planning profession. Thanks for listening.